You're listening to ABC Radio. Call 1300 222 774 or text 0437 774 774.
About the biggest diseases facing the planet at the moment, where would you put malaria? I wonder if some of us think, oh no, there are bigger health issues to face, and surely we're starting to win that battle against malaria, right? Well, the evidence would suggest otherwise. In fact, in Melbourne at the moment is the world's first global malaria conference. And to chat with us about this global health, perhaps epidemic, he can tell us, is Louis De Gamma. He's the director of Princess of Africa Foundation South Africa. He is a UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador and the director of Global Health Advocates France. You were participating in the first World Malaria Conference, Louis, is that correct?
I am.
Why is this conference happening in Melbourne? We're not really a hotbed of malaria.
I think that Australia has played a really critical role in the global world on malaria. In 2012, the government organised Malaria 2012 and began a whole push towards increasing investment and increasing understanding of some of the critical issues. It was part of their wider investment in the Global Fund. And through that, sort of the work in the Mekong came about. The five countries in the Mekong being funded to fight malaria. And, you know, there are a number of research institutes in the Melbourne area that are actively involved in research involved in malaria. So it seems like a natural place, mm-hmm. in actual fact, to come.
How big of an issue is malaria? Is it on the way out?
It depends where you live. Mm-hmm. It's still one of the biggest killers of mankind historically. In 15 African countries, it remains the number one killer. Those 15 African countries represent more than 80% of the disease burden. And India is the one country outside Africa that represents a really significant contribution. And in the rest of the world, you know, there is still a huge number of countries that are in the process of trying to eliminate. And in the Mekong, that's exactly where we are. We're working towards eliminating malaria as a public health threat.
What is working in the fight against malaria? You know, we often hear of charity saying, buy a mosquito net to, you know, pay this amount of money and we'll donate a mosquito net on your behalf. Are things like that the
working?
Best?
Absolutely. So if you look at the history of malaria in the last 10 years, we've made huge progress. Don't let anyone tell you that your money is not going to a good cause. It has. You know, there are huge developments in getting long-lasting mosquito nets out and getting people to sleep under them and getting people to get tested using a rapid diagnostic test and then get treated. So that's brought malaria rates down dramatically. You know, when I first started working, there were over 3 million deaths. And now we're talking about somewhere in the order of 215,000, 216,000. That's a huge change in 20 years. Huge change. And, you know, the Rollback Malaria Partnership, bringing all the different partners together, has played a critical role in making that happen. So, yes, we've come a long way, but we've started to stall. And that's the problem. That's why this conference is so important, because without more investment, without a continued focus, all of the progress that we've made in the last 20 years is under threat, because malaria is a kind of a disease that if you don't keep on top of it, it comes back, and it comes back with vengeance. And we've learned that historically. Sri Lanka is an excellent example. They came very close to eliminating malaria in the 60s, took their foot off the brake because funding evaporated. And it came back and started to kill many, many, many people. But yet last year, Sri Lanka was declared malaria-free. Mm. And 2 weeks ago, Paraguay was declared. So a country like Paraguay, surrounded by rainforests, surrounded by countries, if they can do it, then it can be done anywhere in the world. It just requires genuine political commitment and genuine community engagement. And that's where I work. I mean, I work in community engagement and community empowerment.
I had a look on the conference website, and there's a few objectives of the conference. And objective three says one of the goals of the conference is to strengthen political commitment and action towards malaria elimination. And you just touched on that. What are the political implications of eradicating malaria? How does politics get involved in stopping a disease?
In every single way. Let's take an example again in the Mekong. right now, the disease is basically almost non-existent for most of the population. Where we still have really serious issues is around displaced populations, around ethnic minorities, around indigenous people, around conflict zones, around mobile migrants, around illegal and undocumented migrants. So politically, unless we actually get involved in reaching these hard to reach, and we call them hard to reach, but it's not because they're genuinely hard to reach, it's because it costs a lot more money to reach them. But if we had the political will to reach them, we can actually get to elimination. And without doing that, we can't eliminate. And so politics plays a really big part in that, because we can't just focus on our citizens. We have to focus on everybody in our country, even if they're involved in illegal activities, even if they're involved in being mobile migrants because they've come from another country in the region. We have to tackle the issue and actually give them the services that they need to survive.
Is there a gendered element to the way this disease spreads at all? I know some diseases do, but is malaria doesn't discriminate?
So you don't need a passport. The mosquito doesn't ask for a passport to bite you. It doesn't ask for your legal papers to ask whether you're legal or illegal, or you're working legally, or you're in the forest cutting down trees illegally. It doesn't ask any of that. It doesn't ask if you're male or you're female. And so we need to have policies that aren't discriminatory. And that needs to change. And it isn't changing. It isn't. If you don't have a people-centred, community-centred mechanism to actually deal with the issue, we're not going to actually get to eliminating malaria. We have to focus on the community. Who knows best about your health than yourself? And who would know best about a community's health than the community themselves? So what we want for ourselves, we should also want for other people. Very simple. You want to eliminate malaria, then be inclusive and work inclusively and empower communities to be able to take care of their own needs.
And indeed, that seems to be an important aspect of the conference you're participating in.
That's one of the unique things.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the unique thing about this conference. I mean, we had a couple of days to actually bring civil society organizations from around the world, but also from the Mekong, to really talk about how do we help the public body and the governments and the donors understand that when we talk about a people-centered, human rights-based approach, it is not something that's nice to do. It's absolutely essential, because without doing that, we will not reach our targets.
The time is 25 minutes to 4. I'm Susan Carland, filling in for Rochelle Hunt on Afternoons on ABC Radio Melbourne. Louis, we have a few SMS that have come in, if you don't mind me throwing them to you. Simon from Elsternwicker said, isn't Bill Gates funding malaria research to rid the world of it? So how is that going?
So Bill Gates talked about eliminating malaria. I can't remember the year that he did that. And really, he's been at the forefront of making this push. So, yes, he is investing large sums of money. He's put money into the Global Fund. The Global Fund has virtually every donor country sitting around the table, and all the implementing countries, civil society and the private sector. It regularly, every 3 years, it raises about $13 to $15 billion. We're having a replenishment next year. Hopefully all of the donors will put more money in. That's what's needed. So Bill Gates on his own can't do it. Australia on its own can't do it. We actually, Julie Bishop said that today, this is a disease that requires genuine partnership. We need to all be working together, the private sector, the governments, civil society, academia. We all need each other. The disease requires really focused attention from all those different groups.
Rusty from Springvale has written an SMS about something I remember learning in science. He says, years ago, people with sickle cell anemia were said not to contract malaria. Do you know if this is true?
It's true.
It is true.
They have a greater way of actually fighting malaria.
And Can you utilize that?
It's a genetic. Yes. It's something genetic within their own bodies, and the work is really focused on trying to find new drugs that work. And you know, in the last 7 years, we've been using artemisinin-based combinational therapies, ACTs. They've been extraordinarily effective, but for the first time, in around 2000 and 9, 10, they started to see resistance or tolerance to the these new drugs, and now resistance. And so part of the whole work in the Mekong is trying to eliminate the disease before we have more serious problems with drug resistance. I mean, it spread initially from Cambodia into Thailand and then into Myanmar, and then we discovered it in Laos and also in Vietnam. So that's why we have the Mekong Malaria Elimination Program that's funded by the Global Fund, essentially to look at how we can eliminate this disease before drug resistance becomes a greatly larger issue.
Why is malaria so important to you?
Well, first of all, it was a job, and it was really strange because my mother, when I told her what I was doing, and I didn't know this obviously as a child, she said that the reason I'm alive today was because she was able. I was born in Africa, and she was able to access chloroquine. And she was treated when she was pregnant for me.
So she had malaria when she was pregnant with you.
And had she not accessed treatment, she would have died. And pregnant women are a particularly vulnerable, as are children under 5. So when she said that, I mean, I was shocked. I didn't know that as a child. And then because of all of the work I do in hospitals, in clinics and stuff across the continent, I would go, and I'll give you the example of Zanzibar. I went to Zanzibar and in the height of the malaria season, and I would have to walk over women lying on the floor with their babies because there were so many cases, and the system was just completely overwhelmed. I mean, so the health system just simply couldn't cope with the numbers coming in. And over the time of using long-lasting nets and having diagnosis and treatment and stuff, I've been back to those hospitals 10 years later. And in the height of the malaria season, maybe there are 2 or 3 people in the ward. And that, to me, is just like such mm-hmm. joy that you can actually genuinely, in a period of 10 years, see the massive difference that these investments have made, and that you can go from the extreme kind of anger and frustration. This disease costs $2 to treat. Is a human life not worth $2? I mean, I find it impossible. It is less than a cup of coffee here in Australia. And for that price, you could save the life of a woman, you can save the life of a child, $10 for a long-lasting net, and you can help prevent it. And yet there are still, in many countries, up to 40% of the population simply don't have access to a net because we don't have enough nets. We don't have enough money for indoor residual spraying, and I think we've only got half the money we need. So political will is critical, and it's critical because we're kind of at a pivotal stage, and we've come so far, and it would be tragic to make the same mistakes that were made in the late 60s, where we brought the disease down and then funding stopped. The interest was like, we've done it, but we hadn't done it. And in the meantime, this disease came back, and it hit us with vengeance. And actually, it's usually the poorest and the most vulnerable and the most disenfranchised that take the brunt of this. And for us, if we get the policy wrong, it just means I have to go out and spend more money buying drugs because I can afford to. But for a poor family in a rural area, from a displaced community, from an ethnic minority or from mobile migrants, it means death. Mm. And, you know, and I work with these communities, and they of course they want to live. There's no mother I know that wouldn't give their baby the right medication and do the right thing if she knew what to do.
Such important work that you are doing, Louis de Gamma. Thank you for sharing. I hope that ideally there needs to be no second World Malaria Conference, that in a year you're all out of a job.
It's my hope that every organization that's attending this conference actually sets a timeline that says we don't need to exist anymore because we don't have any malaria. And then we can go on to worry about tuberculosis, also a big killer, or HIV, or neglected tropical diseases. There's no shortage, or dengue. All of them need our attention. So absolutely, if we can write malaria to the history books, as we've nearly done with polio, that would be an amazing achievement.
Very important work indeed. Louis de Gamma is the Director of Global Health Advocates France and the UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador, and he is here for the first World Malaria Conference 2018 at the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre. Thank you so much for your time.